boy. In the words of Paul Heyman, the reigning, defending, undisputed pro wrestling talk shows live from people's apartments Wednesday nights from 10 to 11. Very descriptive, but your returning champs are here. This is Brain Stew Wrestling, pro wrestling talk without the PG filter. What is going on? My name is Hammy. Joining me in studio is, of course, Michael Hipster Punchy Falcone.
Yeah.
And to his right, we see we have an in-studio guest. Welcome back, Mr. Josh Wells.
Hey, what's
Josh
up, guys?
Josh Ain't Funny on Twitter. What's going on, buddy? Haven't seen you in a while.
Good to be here, man. Good to be here.
Entering the show tonight with some Parkway Drive, Devil's Calling. Seth Rollins has some really good taste in music. I'll say that much. That is the theme of NXT TakeOver. And I'm very excited for that. A great NXT show tonight. But I want to say something completely non-wrestling term. And this is something that a lot of people who know me personally didn't think I would say this. Every year, every fall, for the past 7 years now, I have heard tons of excitement from people about a particular show called The Walking Dead. Now, it's been 3 days now, so I'm going to spoil this for you.
Uh-oh.
If you haven't seen The Walking Dead yet, I've heard so many things about this season 7 premiere, about how brutal it was, how violent it was. I'm like, it's on cable. Like, how violent can it be? Oh boy, was I wrong. If you haven't seen it yet, now I saw the first season, the entire first season of The Walking Dead, and I hated it. I think The Walking Dead is an overrated pile of garbage. But I saw the season 7 premiere and saw what Negan did. Now, Mike, you could educate me a little bit on the history of this character, but first off, the guy who plays Negan,
Jeffrey Dean Morgan did
a phenomenal job with it. And the scene itself, when he killed Abraham and Glenn, spoiler.
If people don't know by now,
I forewarned you.
I don't watch
a few seconds
show.
Ago.
I don't watch a show, and I knew that.
I mean, it was mirrored to the comic. I saw the comic strip of Glenn's death scene. It looks just like it, like to the T. All to the point of the eye popping out of the socket. The guy who played Glenn, the guy who plays Negan is the best heel I've ever seen on any TV. I mean, we have to bring it back to wrestling term, but my God, what a monster! And the death scene itself was so unbelievable that I might just give this show one more chance. I gave it an entire full season, and I hated it. I might just start watching season 2 onward now, just to see all the things that happen. Because every fall, I see people say, oh my God, Walking Dead's back, yay, yay, yay. And then halfway through the season, I see people like, oh, why the hell am I still watching this show? So that's why I don't watch it. But this premiere took my breath away. It was incredible to watch. I haven't been this speechless since Shane McMahon jumped off the cage. So now we transition back to wrestling. Man, we go from excitement and taking my breath away to complete and total disarray and taking my breath away. Because Mike, I don't know if you read the leaks of what was happening with TNA's courtroom situation today, but wow. TNA is, we've been saying for the past couple of weeks now, it is on a complete and total downward spiral. And the lawsuit story between Billy Corgan and Dixie Carter and TNA has met its first day in court today. And boy, oh boy, were things being revealed that we suspected, but we didn't know for sure. Like, for instance, how one note of debt they owed Billy Corgan in upwards of $1.6 million or $1.5 million. And that's just one note of debt. How many notes are there? They're being sued by virtually every single type of money collector in the world. They are not able to pay their talent. They owe people millions of dollars. And Dixie Carter, all this time, has been talking to WWE while telling the talent that everything's hunky dory. Mike, what do you think? What you have been paying more attention to the TNA storyline than I had that I have been, admittedly. What is going on with this?
So, basically, like, if you believe, depending on which side you believe, which people are more inclined to believe, Billy Corgan, TNA made certain promises with the money he lent them to keep the company afloat, and he, I believe there were certain things in there that it, either they could pay him back or he gets 36% of the company, which I think is where that figure came from. They're claiming that they have the money to give him and he's just preventing them from doing it. He's saying that it was something like he had to take away all like claim of that money for them to be able to get that money, if I remember correctly.
Well, Billy Corgan has been investing his own personal funds to keep the company afloat. It's because of him they were able to secure Bound for Glory. It's because of him they were able to secure tapings for TNA Impact. And now he wants control of the company, and there is a clause in his contract, allegedly. You can read the Twitter feed of Nate Rau at TNNATERAU. You can read the feed of this guy. He was an investigative reporter who live tweeted the entire trial today. And there are some juicy details here. And one clause that was brought out was they was accidentally revealed that TNA owes Billy Corgan in upwards of $1.5 million. It's revealed that there is a clause in the contract that there might be a clause in the contract that states that if Billy Corgan gives X amount of dollars, if he's not paid back by a certain amount of time, he in turn gets control of the company. Boy, if that's true, this is a game changer. Because as wrestling fans, I mean, we've been watching TNA, and before, it was cool to crap on TNA because the product was just bad. I mean, the TNA was really bad because they brought in a lot of ex-WCW people, the key components in the fall of WCW. But then now, it's not even about the bad product anymore, Mike. It's about the behind-the-scenes crap that's going on with TNA. The product's actually somewhat watchable. And because I mean, forget of what you may think about this whole thing with TNA. We as wrestling fans need to think about what the talent might be thinking right now. What can you imagine guys like EC3 and guys like Abyss, especially being someone who's been there since the beginning. He's an original. What is he thinking?
Those guys should have jumped ship a long time ago. Though I think the writing's been on the wall. You had a Freudian slip before. You said a note of death instead of a note of debt. Freudian slip, man. TNA needs to die. Like, let's just.
I accidentally say note of death.
I don't think it was an accident. I think subconsciously you know that TNA just needs to be put to sleep. It needs to be put to rest. You know what I want to know? What do Smashing Pumpkin fans think about all this? Like, that's got to be. Like, does this stop the reunion if Billy Corgan's fighting so hard for TNA? Was he a bad bandmate? Maybe he's the reason Smashing Pumpkins ain't together no more.
maybe
we should have seen the writing on the wall when they needed Billy Corgan's assistance. Like, no, not him. He broke up a world famous rock and roll band. Like, if you have to trust a rock and roll star to save your company, I mean, I think you're in trouble.
You're a little fucked there, yeah.
And what does this say for Dixie Carter? I mean, she's run out of money. The Carter era in TNA is all but done, officially, finally. This is a horse that should have been put out of its misery years ago. But let's go back to the question I asked. What do you think the talent is thinking right now? The guys like Abyss, who have been there since day one and have never jumped ship. The guys who came through there, whether they're ex-WWE guys, whether they're ex-Ring of Honor guys, the guys who helped build this company up to a legit competitor at one point with WWE. And even now, what do you think the Hardys are thinking? Look at Matt Hardy. His broken gimmick, it has single-handedly created buzz. And like I said, when we first were introduced to broken Matt Hardy, they have to capitalize on this because this is the first legitimate ray of hope TNA has had in years. And, of course, darling Dixie Carter has just let this ship go to waste. And there's just no repairing Dixie Carter's relationship within the pro wrestling community. There's no way she walks out of this with anything other than a few pennies to her name, because that's all she's doing right now is fighting to get as much money out of this as possible, because she has just bled this company dry with her money. And it's just it's sad, because as wrestling fans, I mean, yes, we may have our loyalties to our fandom somewhere else. We may biasly view TNA as in a more negative aspect than we do WWE. But as wrestling fans, we don't want to see TNA, a wrestling promotion that's responsible for the feeding of several hundred talents' families, the people who work behind the scenes. We don't want to see anybody lose a job because of this. But we got to say, and I think you guys would both agree with me, that if TNA is to survive this, if Billy Corgan gets control of TNA, this needs to be a complete rebuild. No, the TNA name is done.
Yeah, new name.
There's so much damage goods with this. Billy Corgan, if he does get control of this company, he needs to completely rebrand it and get as far away from TNA, from the TNA name as possible. And by the way, what do you think Jeff Jarrett is thinking of all this? This is his baby. This is his creation. It's being destroyed. I can only imagine what Jeff Jarrett is feeling. It must be what Paul Heyman felt when Vince McMahon relaunched ECW. And just you raised a child, and then you get divorced from it, and now the stepfather is raising your kid to be a punk, and you're just disappointed with your kid because the stepfather's ruining him. That has to be metaphorically what this must feel like for Jeff Jarrett. I can only imagine. But again, as wrestling fans, we cannot cheer for the death of TNA. We can only hope that Billy Corgan is really the true White Knight. He's the face in all this. We are cheering for Billy Corgan to save this brand and keep this company afloat. But he has to rebrand it. He has to distance himself from TNA. And my God, Dixie Carter and the entire Carter regime has to get away from this.
They have to just go away for a long time.
If the Billy Corgan thing doesn't work out, maybe they can ask Marilyn Manson for help.
Well, he gives them he lets them use his music for the decay, so.
Okay. Travis Parm, attorney for TNA, claimed that such loan agreements are not legal and therefore the question of insolvency is moot. Parm argued that Corgan held TNA and Carter over the barrel in order to get access to the cash he was offering. He said Corgan offered lending terms that would, quote, make a loan shark blush. Financial details in the lawsuit have been I just lost track of where it was. And under Hobbs Lyle's orders, the attorneys carefully did not cite dollar figures or other details in court on Wednesday. But it was accidentally revealed, I think, that one of the notes of debt that TNA owe Corgan is in excess of $1.5 million. So you can only imagine how many notes of debt there are. It is far more than we anticipated, and it is inevitable at this point. Because now if you look at the TNA website, there's nothing there as far as tapings go. All tapings have been postponed indefinitely until this whole thing's over and see where we go from there. But if I'm Cody Rhodes, I'm looking at my schedule like, I think I'll just stick with the independent scene from now on. I feel terrible about all of this. I feel awful for TNA. But I'm also cheering that Billy Corgan gets control of this, because from everything that he's said and all the interviews that I've seen of him and everything I've read him say, he is, in my opinion, he means the best and he means well and he genuinely loves this business and he wants to do well by TNA. So you know what? I'm all on Team Corgan on this. Dixie Carter needs to go away.
Dixie Carter's track record is too sketchy to even be on her side remotely, no matter what kind of evidence she had, like, has that it's, like, not her fault in this particular case. She still destroyed a company that at one point people thought was better than WWE.
Here's the main argument for his attorney. Scott Sims argued that his client, Billy Corgan's, staved off creditors and gave TNA the cash flow it needed to pay for productions on two occasions in 2016. As part of these loan deals, Corgan rose to the title of president, but he wasn't given operating control of TNA. So it was basically like Dana White in the UFC. He's labeled as president, but he has no power, at least not anymore. For the third loan, which was this past month or so, I think. For the third loan, Corgan entered into a loan agreement with Carter in which he would gain her board of directors voting rights 92.5%, so basically almost complete control of the company, if the company became insolvent, meaning if the company didn't pay him back and has to file Chapter 11 and go out of business, it's now Corgan's. So pay Corgan or he gets control of the company. That's according to his lawyer. Sims argued that TNA is insolvent and fails the cash flow test because it can't pay its bills. There are multiple talents that are coming out, leaking their information. You see it all over the wrestling news sites. There are talents from all levels of pay and all levels of stardom on the roster coming out and saying that they are either being delayed paychecks or just not getting paid at all. There's production crew members not getting paid. There's credit card bills not getting paid. There's all sorts of money not being paid because TNA just has no money left.
People are comparing it to WCW. This sounds more like the end of, like, the latter days of ECW.
This is the worst. This is the worst of both of those situations, I think, Mike. The poor money management from Dixie Carter and horrible booking from WCW. Mm-hmm. Because what killed TNA for me was when they brought Eric Bischoff and Vince Russo in. And then later Hulk Hogan. Like, these these three were the reasons WCW crashed. And then it killed the product. They managed to finally build the product back up where it's watchable if you give it a chance. And then and then they do what ECW did, which is not manage their money and not pay their people on time. Taz bounced because he wasn't getting paid. There are multiple talents that are leaving and or reluctantly staying because they're hoping that that's the only shot they got left because they don't see a future in WWE. But yeah, TNA is, for lack of better term, in my opinion, on their deathbed. And if you want to read the report on what's going on here, Nate Rau on Twitter at TNNATERAU. This guy live tweeted the entire trial today. And if you want to read all the juicy details, I'm not going to go into all of them, but if you want to read all the details, follow him.
The juicy detail. This is like the pain. This is the painful part about being a wrestling fan in the internet age is that we have like instant access to court proceedings. I just want to watch two barbarians beat the fake crap out of each other. Like, it's so depressing that we can get so much information. I just wish somebody would tell me TNA's in trouble. Oh yeah, and like that's it. That's the end of the story. are Dixie and Billy Corgan going to be able to like choose wrestlers to fight each other for control of the company? Because if not, I'm not interested. But it's everywhere. These are insane times where it's just crazy that we have access to all this information and we find out how bad they are at doing business. It almost makes you think like, you know, maybe at some point in your life you'd be foolish to think, oh, I could run my own wrestling organization. But then you read this stuff. There's guys live tweeting from the courtroom like, oh, wait, I could run my own wrestling organization.
It goes back to what Chris Jericho said. He could have bought WCW. If he wanted to, he could have invested enough money to buy it. And I think Jericho would have run WCW far better
than amazing.
What Dixie Carter's doing this day. But
I would love to just spend one day in Chris Jericho's imagination. I'm sure it's...
Oh, God.
You want to invade his mind? You probably would make the list.
Yeah.
That's a good sliding door. I invented it.
all right. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we need to talk about the I don't want to say bad directions that Raw and SmackDown are taking, but for other reasons, both of them are showing signs of there might be some trouble brewing for both of these shows. We'll explain why we would come back. This is Brainstew Wrestling. Stay right there. Are you a musician? Are you a singer-songwriter? Are you someone that needs help audio editing? Look no further than Brainstew Media. Based out of northern New Jersey, Brainstew Media is your one-stop shop for all of your audio needs. Whether you're looking to record your first demo, your next album, or your next concert, Brainstew Media provides the best service and prices you will find. Check out our rates, studio, and portfolio by going to brainstewmedia.com today.
Who doesn't like to be naked? Sure, we all do. But the police usually frown upon public nudity. Well, now you can stay out of jail and look good doing so with a t-shirt from Skunk Duck Design. From sports to politics to the wide world of nerdcraft, there's a shirt for you at Skunk Duck. They even have shirts for you for 20 followers. Skunk Duck shirts come in both a regular and women's cut, and with sizes from extra small to 5XL, there's a shirt for everyone. Oh, did I mention they have hoodies too? Because they totally have hoodies. Go to teespring.com/stores/skunkduckdesign to get the shirt that's right for you. That's teespring.com/stores/skunkduckdesign. New shirts are being added all the time, so follow Skunk Duck on social media at facebook.com/skunkduckdesign for all the latest updates. Skunk Duck Design, the best ducking designs on the web.
Do you like pro wrestling that is real, in your face, and not congested with cheesy promos or two-minute matches? Check out Pro Wrestling Magic. Independent wrestling has never looked better than Pro Wrestling Magic. Don't rely on superstars for your need of wrestling. Check out real pro wrestling from Pro Wrestling Magic. Check out their upcoming shows, schedules, roster, and announcements by going to their website, WrestlingIsMagic.com.
Yo, man, it's a lot of brothers out there flaking and perpetrating, but scared to kick reality.
Yo, Dre, you've been doing all this dope producing. You had a chance to show them what time it is.
So what you want me to do?
What's up? Welcome back to Brainstew Wrestling, everybody. We're not going to lighten up the conversation because there's going to be more complaining because now we go from the TNA shit show to the Monday night shit show to the Tuesday show that's actually doing better than the Monday shit show. And I don't know if it's because the Tuesday show is good or because the Monday show is so bad that the Tuesday show is like... the sort of the cute friend who hangs out with ugly girls.
I think SmackDown's good on its own. I just want to put it out there. I my heart beats very much.
SmackDown is good, but I think Mike's right. That Duff reference is very accurate. SmackDown is the ugly fat friend that hangs out with pretty girls. Raw is the hot girl that when you realize is just a total bitch. That's what it is. This past week of shows has just not been good. First off, there is a problem with Monday Night Raw when the hottest thing on the show is where Jericho's list has gone. When an inanimate object like the list of Jericho is the hottest thing on your show, there's a big problem with Monday Night Raw. And it's amazing because this was the go home show to a Raw pay-per-view Hell in a Cell, which is this Sunday.
Yeah.
I'm more excited for next week's SmackDown than I am for Hell in a Cell right now. And that is the honest truth. There's like a couple like weird things in SmackDown where it's like I can't wait to see the resolution next week or how this story progresses. Whereas like Hell in a Cell, I don't know, man. I mean, I kind of want to see Sasha and Charlotte, but other than that...
It's a three-match card.
Yeah.
It's a triple main event because... they have to say triple main event because Mick Foley was said something idiotic.
But why does Roman Reigns get main event status again? I'm done with it, man. Enough. Like,
well, let's be honest. They've got to call it that because it'll be one of the last three matches, because that match will be the breather between the women's match and the Universal title match.
I guess.
It'll be death spotted. That's slotted.
But... here's how Monday Night Raw opened.
Something unfathomable has happened. Something that could change the very course of the WWE. Somebody has stolen the list of Jericho.
When there's that much of a reaction to a list, a little piece of paper, when there's that much of a reaction to this.
That crowd was hot.
Well, they've made a shirt based on this list. Like,
that shirt is hot, by the way.
Yeah, a piece of paper on a clipboard has its own shirt.
Dana
Brooke, but Dana Brooke does not have her own shirt. Like, that's how bad she is and how over the list is. A clipboard has a shirt and not a wrestler in the women's division.
You see him doing two in a no thing, and you see Jericho's face selling this. It's great. I love the fact that how I love how entertaining this is, but I also need to remember that, oh boy, guys, this is the hottest thing on Monday Night Raw.
They're lucky they have Jericho right now. I was reading things that he's going to go back on tour or record a Fozzy soon. What are they going to do when Jericho's not there? He really is the anchor of the show for me right now. I'm for the past month or so, I'm just like, thank God for Chris Jericho, because if it wasn't for him, there's nothing to take away from these shows anymore. He's just amazing. He earns the right to write GOAT on, you know, on his tights. It's just,
yeah, he's
phenomenal what he's doing.
The one person who can do it and not have people snicker at him for doing it.
I would say arguably this is up there with my all-time favorite Jericho runs in WWE. Yeah. This is absolutely up there.
Like, to the point where Vince McMahon is begging him not to take his expected time off.
Is that a thing that's happening?
Yeah. Well, Jericho's deal is that he only works house shows and doesn't, like, do, like, TV. And then a lot of injuries happened, so he brought himself back on TV, and I think it was supposed to go back to him doing only house shows.
It just seems like he's so great at being an on-screen character. It's just like, I just feel like he has to have a passion for that part of the business still, where he doesn't just want to do house shows. I mean, I'm sure the house shows are enjoyable. You know, I'm not trying to trash house shows as compared to TV. It's just, man, he's so great on camera.
Yeah, he's got so, like, great charisma. And actually, like I mentioned off air, I was watching the Jericho edition of the Monday Night Wars documentary series on the network, and he mentioned and how he developed his mic work on WCW was because they were not paying attention at all, because everything was NWO, and then Goldberg. So he was able to turn heel and, like, just, like, be himself times, like, 10 and just be ridiculous, and the character that eventually gained so much ground they couldn't ignore him. But
and then they still never gave him the main event push anyway. It was really sad. I loved that Monday Night War series on the network.
It's really good. I mean, some of the ones are like, all right, why is this getting its own, like, hour-long segment? And then there's others where it's like, all right, you know, I wish this was like a 2-hour-long documentary for this specific part of it.
I want to discuss one more very good thing about this past week's Raw. And to me, it's... I mean, obviously... Let's throw in the New Day there, because the New Day is always very entertaining to watch. But this particular segment with Enzo and Cass shows me that not only are Enzo and Cass being misused on the roster, but this should show everyone just how over these people are. Let's listen for ourselves.
My name is Enzo Amore, and I am a certified G and a bona fide stud, and you can't teach that. And this right here, this is Big Cass.
I love the sound effect of a muting microphone. I love the cartoony sound effect. So anyway, Gallows and Anderson come out, and they're doing their... You know what Gallows and Anderson are? They're the jocks in high school that want to pick on the nerds. Just unoriginal, unbelievably boring shticks that they
have
now.
That's what someone says about them if they've only seen them in this WWE run.
We have to talk about this run. We can't glorify on their past, which is fantastic, but this is now, Mike. We have to talk about what's going on with them now. And right now, they're just being misused. They're not a good tag team right now. They're great in the ring, but their antics and the way that their characters are being presented, it's just not good. It's just not entertaining. Even for bad guys. I mean, they said, well, shut you two dorks up. Like, who says dorks? Who says dorks in 2016?
The people writing for WWE Creative, apparently.
The whole thing was cringeworthy. Oh, sorry.
So let's get to me, one of the biggest highlights of this past week's Raw, and quite frankly, this month's Raw. What happens after Gallows and Anderson do their we're big, mean, bad, and you're dorks thing? Here's what Enzo and Cass do. For those of you with the benefit of the video podcast, just watch for yourself.
I think this one works. I think this works.
Hold on. My name is Enzo Amore, and I am a certified G and a bona fide stud. And you can't keep back. And this right here, this is Big Cass, and he's 7 foot tall, and you can't keep back.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how over they are.
They don't even need a microphone. Listen to this crowd, creative team. So here we go. Here's Cass.
And there's only one word to describe you.
See? No microphone? No problem.
Yeah, exactly. No microphone, no problem. That's how over Enzo and Cass are on the Raw roster. They don't need their microphones because that bit that they do is just so embedded into our minds right now. They can just, the entire crowd can recite it like their favorite Pearl Jam song. They don't even need microphones anymore. It's like when you go to a concert and whoever's the singer just holds out the microphone and the people recite the whole song.
Which Josh and I are very familiar with.
Or as I call pulling the Vince Neil because he just doesn't do it anymore. He just doesn't sing his own songs anymore. But... What did you think of that? Are you as blown away with that as I was when this happened? I was like, "Wow, holy shit!"
I mean, kind of am, but also let's face it, and the fans know the intro by heart, so like they say it along anyway.
But that takes a lot of balls to do without the microphone.
Enzo and Cass are ballsy as fuck.
Well, also, what if this crowd was dead? Even the most dead of crowds, I've noticed, the entire show could be dead, except maybe the main event and the final 10 minutes of the show. But every time Enzo and Cass come on, the crowd heats up. Because the energy that these two just bring to the roster and to the product and to the TV, I can only imagine what they're like going to a Monday Night Raw in person. But Enzo and Cass are, to me, two of the most valuable players on Monday Night Raw right now, and this should just show everything that the creative people and Vince McMahon need to know about Enzo and Cass, because they are so ridiculously over with the crowds. It's not even funny at this point, Mike.
Yeah, and I've heard too, as far as their push is concerned, they're holding off their push for like WrestleMania season. So, like, they're kind of on the back burner right now because you've got, like, New Day. Like, they're probably going to have them break the tag title reign record. And then once WrestleMania time hits, then Enzo and Cass will probably start getting another big tag push.
So, a lot of Monday Night Raw this week was just meh. A lot of it's just been meh and just not really that good. But one thing that WWE has been promoting for a couple of weeks now, Mike, is Goldberg versus Lesnar, which today has been made official for Survivor Series. Hell in a Cell yet.
Don't you feel like they were probably going to say something like they were going to mention Survivor Series in a Paul Heyman promo, but they just cut it short, never got to it?
I mean,
probably, but like, and also, like, we forget Survivor Series is literally like 3 weeks away.
We have 3 to 4 Monday Night Raws until Survivor Series. We don't have a lot of time.
Yeah. Like, so, I mean, they got to do Hell in a Cell, and then they've got to do 3 weeks of building their, like, person teams.
They have, so what do they have? Wait, how many Raws are there? There's 3 Raws till Survivor Series or 4? I mean, like 3. Either way, yeah, I think that's 9 or 12 hours. They have plenty of time.
It's round WWE.
They'll mismanage and make it.
I mean, they should have plenty of time. I can't be held responsible if they mismanage the time, but we all know it's enough time. SmackDown already started building up their Survivor Series storylines. Raw should be able to get caught up. Should.
It's right on WWE.com. Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar. After 12 years, Goldberg will return to a WWE ring for an apocalyptic showdown with Brock Lesnar.
Apocalyptic.
The battlefield of choice, Survivor Series, November 20th on WWE Network.
Is Goldberg going to take his jacket off?
God willing. why I wanted to bring this up and throw a little negativity at this because...
Oh, I will.
Oh.
We've
been waiting 2 days to throw negativity at this.
Some genius in WWE thought it would be a great idea for Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman, the supposed heels in this program with Goldberg. Some genius thought that these two should come to the ring in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Brock Lesnar's hometown, to cut a promo and get boos. Some genius thought this would be an amazing idea. You want to know what happened? This happened.
No, hold on. Excuse me. We seem to have a smart-ass Goldberg fan here tonight.
He literally had to pick out one Goldberg fan.
He had to pick out one person cheering for Goldberg. Why would a heel go to their home city to cut a heel promo?
I'm here for Brock Lesnar. The Beast is home. It's in your face, Vince. It's in your face.
And one brave soul with a Roman Empire sign.
And you know what? I think a lot of people overlook this. That Curtis Axel thing that happened earlier in the night where he came out and he gave the promo of his career, which granted not saying much, but I mean, it was a good promo in his hometown. And they had him, you know, do the duties for Bo Dallas. I think that already pissed this crowd off. Like, they're already like, wait, like you're going to do this to our hometown heroes? Like, they couldn't wait for Lesnar to get out there after that. So it just makes no sense to me.
You have a smart-ass Goldberg fan here tonight. And I will inform you, sir, and anybody else that wants to have that inclination, that those chants are really starting to piss Brock Lesnar off.
They're cheering it.
Heyman's like,
what can I say to get heat from these people?
Do you think like Heyman at some point backstage before all this though was like, this is a bad idea, we shouldn't do this?
I'm sure he was, but he's just talent now. He's not a writer anymore. He's just talent. He goes where Vince tells him to.
Now, this is how bad of an idea this was. Paul Heyman is a guy who turned the story about CM Punk in Chicago into a promo for Brock Lesnar versus Undertaker.
One of the best promos I've ever seen, by the way. Just unbelievable.
Like,
to go into such a hostile territory and turn it around. And
yeah.
We're not saying that Heyman can't work a crowd, but
what's the check and balance system backstage? Somebody that gets paid a lot of money should have known that this is a bad idea, should have said it was a bad idea, and should have been able to convince everybody else. This shouldn't have been a hard situation.
All right, someone would say
blows my mind.
Someone would say that's a bad idea, and then Vince would be like, no, suck my balls. We're having Brock play the heel. That would be Vince responding to that.
I mean, don't Goldberg and Lesnar, especially Lesnar, in a certain way kind of operate outside of this customary heel face, these molds that we put all the other full-time talent in? Every time Lesnar shows up, we're not really sure what he is.
The only mold Lesnar doesn't fit in when it comes to being full-time or part-time is the wellness policy.
Oh, yeah, that too.
But no,
that is a fair point.
They're pretty much making him the heel in this feud.
Why can't just put him in a ring and let the crowd do whatever they want to do with that?
Unofficially, he's the heel, but according to Vince, there are no faces or heels. But
this is probably going to blow up in WWE's face big time. By the way,
it absolutely is.
I read somewhere else that WWE wants you to forget that Goldberg pretty much put Bret Hart out of business. Because Survivor Series is in Toronto, right? So, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that's a direct reason why they want Goldberg to be so over. That they're afraid Canada won't forgive him for Bret Hart.
See, when fantasy warfare meets the reality of my client, Goldberg is going to be like Humpty Dumpty because chance in the world won't be able to put Goldberg back together again when he is beaten, victimized, and conquered by my client Brock Lesnar. All of the people around the world that like to sit here and jump on the Brock Lesnar bandwagon chanting Suplex City are just like the people that go around the world with this cultural phenomenon chanting the name of Goldberg.
I think we can see legitimate frustration in Heyman right there.
I mean, and that's just the beginning. I mean, I think going from this point forward, he just looks frustrated the whole time.
Oh, yeah. He's like,
at the very end, I thought he was going to blow a gasket.
He came out like, this is not going to work. This is not
going
to work.
Going into this night, I actually thought this is the night that they were going to let Brock Lesnar get on the mic again. His hometown, there's never going to be a safer venue to let Brock Lesnar talk on a microphone. That's how sure I
think that would have made it worse.
Paul Heyman came out for this promo with as much faith in this promo as in this crowd as he had managing Curtis Axel.
That's great.
Look, even see
that's
even
the
see Lesnar. You even see Lesnar going, oh my god.
That was the best part of Raw. Brock Lesnar can't keep it kayfabe right now.
Neither can Heyman, though, with his stumbling with this promo.
Rock's hometown of Minneapolis.
I will advise those of you who are chanting the name of Goldberg to please refrain from doing so before my client takes matters into his own freaking hands with you.
He is literally threatening violence against the crowd with Lesnar. A fans chant Suplex City. There's a couple Goldberg chants there, not gonna lie, but there's mostly Suplex City.
Brock Lesnar comes home and half of this audience is gonna chant the name of Goldberg. Bill Goldberg, this is all your fault.
Half the audience, Paul? Really? Half? You really want to say that? It's like 75-25 cheering for Lesnar.
Goldberg sucks.
A loud, thunderous Goldberg sucks chant.
Thank you, Minnesota.
Heyman's like, all right, I'm out of options here.
You would see Lesnar like, I'm making so much fucking money from this. I don't care.
I mean, he's got to feel pretty good that, you know, he was just sitting backstage and they're like, yeah, we're going to make you the heel. And he comes out and the crowd's like, we don't think so. Not tonight.
This is the face of a man who does not give a shit. This is the face of a man who's like, I'm being paid so much fucking money to be here, it's not even funny. I can buy all of your houses. Or it's Minnesota, I can buy all of your trailers. Unbelievable. The crowd was eating up Lesnar. Look, and they just cut it short. They're like, all right, screw this. This ain't working.
That was awkward.
So let's cut our losses and try again another day. But this leads me to the question. Has to build this properly, you need to A, show that Goldberg can still go, so which means he has to take out somebody. Either Curtis Axel, Bo Dallas, or somebody. He has to lay someone out and show that he can still have a spear to build him up, make him look strong. But you can't do it to a high-level guy on Raw because you'll take them down if they're just buried by Goldberg. So, I mean, Goldberg has to take someone out because they need to make him look like the strong one going into this match with Lesnar, because they've already built Lesnar up to being the unstoppable monster. And then we said, we have three or four Raws until Survivor Series, and I guarantee it, Goldberg and Lesnar are going to be there for maybe two of them. There's probably going to be one more of just Goldberg there, and then one more with Lesnar. One more with just Goldberg, one more with Goldberg and Lesnar, where they'll have some form of confrontation.
Right, like they'll kind of swap which one's there, and then it'll be the two of them, and then Survivor Series, which will be horrible.
I mean, guys, do we need to remind you of their first encounter? I mean, do we have to remind you of?
Oh God, no!
Their
Stone
first
Cold
encounter.
Won't be there.
Yeah, I said that a couple weeks ago. He won't be there to bail them out.
I mean, everyone remembers the epic failure known as their first bout at WrestleMania 20. So, I don't know if anyone was excited for this rematch in 2016, 12 years later after this, but. I mean, you could make the argument that it's under different circumstances now. At WrestleMania 20, this was the dawn of the internet age, where everyone knew what was going on behind the scenes. Lesnar was out after WrestleMania 20. Goldberg's contract ended at WrestleMania 20. But we knew both of them were going out after, so they half-assed this. I mean, I was there at WrestleMania 20. The only two exciting things that were happening in this match was Austin as referee and some guy dressed as Hulk Hogan in the audience. Those were the two highlights of this match. So what makes us think that the rematch is going to be any different than this?
No, it's going to be the worst match, and it's probably going to main event Survivor Series.
I just hate that there's no one on the roster that they'll throw in the ring with Brock Lesnar and have them taken serious, except for Roman Reigns. But they'll pull relics from the past. We don't need Goldberg right now. The WWE does not need Goldberg. There's enough talent on the roster. This feels like a very desperate move to me. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure some fans are joyous and nostalgia and whatnot. People are into that, I guess. I don't know. I'm not excited by it. I'm a jaded.
This is, honestly, this is the Beast versus a nostalgic act.
Pretty much.
I mean, all Goldberg is there for is nostalgia. I mean, last week it was, all right, cool guys, Goldberg's back. Whoop-dee-doo. This is awesome. Oh my God, he has to actually build a match now. Oh my God, he actually has to go in the ring and wrestle. We've seen what Lesnar can do in the ring still. We haven't seen what Goldberg can do. Goldberg hasn't wrestled in 12 years, guys. His match at WrestleMania 20 was the last wrestling match he's been in.
I'm not a fan. I mean, that's a big reason why I'm not a fan of when WWE pulls moves like this. You know, there's guys that are busting their asses every day, proving that, you know, they're the one of the best in the world. And, you know, you can pull some guy that has 12 years of rust on him. I felt this way. I kind of felt this way when Sting and Seth Rollins fought. I just felt like Sting's too old for this.
We end up seeing that he was too old.
He just doesn't wrestle frequently enough to be in there with such a dude like Seth Rollins, who's just one of the best right now in his prime, of his career. And Brock Lesnar right now is a beast in the ring. I mean, it may not be the most exciting moveset that he has in the ring, but he just manhandles people, and it's just fun to watch. And I don't know if Goldberg's going to have to combat that.
We can only see, but so far, like, we had one positive moment, which was our nostalgic purposes of seeing Goldberg come back in the ring. But now he's here, the match is made, they have to build this. And so far, aside from seeing the nostalgic act of Goldberg making an entrance to the ring again, I'm not sold on this match at all. I don't know about you guys.
No, I'm not.
I'm not sold yet. So, and they have 3 weeks to sell this, because otherwise we're going to see another WrestleMania 20 happen.
It's going to make the WrestleMania 20 match look like a 5-star Matt Classic.
But at least it won't be at WrestleMania. It'll be at Survivor Series.
That's still one of the big four, though.
I'm of the opinion that Money in the Bank has kind of taken over the Survivor Series spot in the big four anyways. Survivor Series,
I would say it's big five now.
Big five, sure. I just think Survivor Series has been underwhelming in the past 2 years.
Speaking of the big papers, we have a rumored match at Royal Rumble that we need to discuss before we get our Hell in a Cell predictions. But first, let's switch to SmackDown. And I think one of the most solid things about SmackDown was this exchange between Alexa Bliss and Becky Lynch.
Yes.
Becky, when I became number one contender, you started to grow this yellow streak from the top of your head all the way down your spine. And that's because you knew that when you stepped in the ring with me, that your little fairy tale was going to end. That the clock was going to strike midnight on your little Cinderella story, and you were going to lose that women's title.
Our match was postponed because I was rushed to the emergency room and the doctors wouldn't let me leave the hospital, let alone clear me to compete. I'm sorry I couldn't compete.
Okay, yeah. I get it. You may be a world champion, Becky, but you're also a world-class con artist. Because I believe that you were able to fool all these people. But you can't fool me. So what's the excuse gonna be in 2 weeks, Becky, huh? Food poisoning? Oh, that's a good one. Or maybe your boyfriend dumped you because he realized he was dating an orange troll.
First off, if that's what an orange troll looks like, I'm okay with orange trolls.
I think Alexa Bliss has gotten so great at promos.
Oh my God, very entertaining.
Talk about, like, a lot of people, when they bounce from NXT to Raw or SmackDown, it's like they're under a bigger spotlight, and they don't seem to catch on right away that these promos need to be bigger. But Alexa Bliss, she gets it, man. She gets I hate her, and that's why that's how I know she's so great. When she rolls her eyes and she stops real quick to look at the audience, she gets the little things, the nuances. Just amazing. She's young. It's just going to be years of this. I'm impressed. I'm impressed with Alexa Bliss. I love Becky too, but Becky, she's been good.
I hope they continue this program next week, because we will be going to the SmackDown in Newark show. I hope next week's a good show. Can we make a great SmackDown for next week, and then you can go back to being mediocre again?
Because you guys are going to get to cheer for James Ellsworth, and that's amazing.
Yes.
Hey, we've got two hands.
That's it. I mean, we got six hands in this studio. We could take on any three man. We could take on the New Day.
Yeah,
because we have a fighting chance.
Maybe
because.
We have six hands in this room, which means we have more than enough hands to take on the people who thought that this was a good idea. Randy Orton, is he joining the Wyatt family? Is he?
But we don't know. It's a mystery. It's a good cliffhanger.
Your actions earlier tonight.
Randy trying to look all cryptic and shit. How awkward must it be for the girl holding the mic for the microphone?
Join him.
All right, now wait a minute. Wait. I want to defend this. I want to defend it. Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt are two guys, especially the characters they portray on television, that have gone stale, that have been stale. Bray Wyatt, maybe not as long as Randy Orton, but the stale.
I wouldn't say they Bray's.
They need something fresh. They need a new direction. For the first time in maybe 6-7 years, I'm like, I wonder what Randy Orton is going to say next week. I've never said that in the past 6-7 years, guys.
Yeah, especially with him talking, because he's not good at it.
Yeah, I never want to hear him talk, but now I want to hear an explanation for this.
You don't like him pausing every other word?
No, we don't like Randy Borton.
Maybe just more exciting.
I'm with you, Josh. I'm intrigued by this, but at the same time, I'm like, what is going on with this? Weren't they just fighting just a couple of weeks ago? This is the same guy who had enough courage to face Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam? Like, what's going on with Randy Orton? Now he's joining the Wyatt family, possibly?
Well, I mean, remember Daniel Bryan joined at a really weird time, too. So, obviously, if history teaches anything, they don't care about that. I'm not saying it's right, but, you know, that doesn't seem to hit the WWE equation. You know, it's the same people that wanted to book Brock Lesnar as a heel on Monday.
And in your main event of SmackDown, you had the unlikely hero, James Ellsworth, everyone's new favorite jobber hero.
Look at him.
Interfere in a match where if Ambrose can beat Styles, he gets the number one contendership and a title shot. And Ellsworth, well, he costs Ambrose the title.
No chin music!
No chin music. I love it.
Qualification, the WWE World Champion, AJ Styles.
Can we talk about Mike Chioda, how amazing he was in this? He looked at James Ellsworth in disbelief right after he kicked him. He didn't even end the match right away. He was just kind of like, what do you think you're doing, man? Like, it hurt my Kyoto to watch that. Like, he didn't want to end the match.
You see Kyoto just like,
body language is
the
like,
hell
bro,
are you doing?
What the hell?
So don't make me end this match in a disqualification. I don't want to do it, but he had to.
Bravo to Ambrose selling this. I will admit,
this is a great piece of work. Everyone in that ring is doing the damn thing right now. Look at Kyoto.
Look at Mike Kyoto.
He has never had this much fun in like his whole refereeing career. This is amazing. This is amazing to me. I think this is, I can't get enough of it, man. I love it. Love it. I love SmackDown right now.
So far, SmackDown has been the better written show.
And it's fun. It's just fun.
Styles is showing that he is the anchor of the show.
Absolutely.
I personally am getting a little tired of the Ambrose Styles storyline because it's been done already a few times, and it seems like this is all that they got, which here's the problem that I have with Raw and SmackDown. Raw, they have all the talent in the world, but not good writing. They don't have a lot of good storylines going into this. There's Charlotte and Sasha. That's about it. And what's going on with Owens and Rollins. And Jericho has excellent comic relief. That's about it on Raw. SmackDown has the superior writing. It has the superior stories, but not enough talent to really take full advantage of it. And the only showcase rivalry right now on SmackDown is Styles and Ambrose. And I think that their milkiness to the point where the well's starting to get a little dry here, Mike.
I think the Ellsworth thing is making it a little more exciting. It's a new ingredient. But I also think that they're doing a really good job with the tag title scene. I think they're doing a great job with Ziggler and Miz. Should never be this exciting. We should be so bored, but I think they're doing a great job with their storyline. I think the Becky, Alexa Bliss thing. I think SmackDown is really hitting the mid-card stride really well right now. And I get what you're saying about Styles and Ambrose. They definitely, like, next time they fight for the title, end it, push somebody else. I think that's what they're afraid of. They're afraid to push a mid-card guy up into the title scene, possibly.
I think we will see some trades after Survivor Series.
That could
to
help.
To kind of mix things up a little bit there. Like maybe The Miz going to Raw for somebody else, and just, I think we're going to get that. But yeah, they're definitely not doing much to elevate some of their mid-card guys to the main event. Not after like the Dolph Ziggler title shot at SummerSlam.
But I mean, think about the amazing things we've seen since SummerSlam. AJ Styles and John Cena putting on that great match at SummerSlam. And since then, John Cena's taken a clean loss to Dean Ambrose. You have Dean Ambrose beating AJ Styles and AJ Styles beating Dean Ambrose. It's just, there's so much parody. It's just, nobody is unbeatable anymore. And that's thanks to the SmackDown title scene right now. I think in the long run, it's a good thing. It's a healthy thing for everybody on the roster. They just got to figure out how to transition out of this Styles Ambrose program. I think they'll figure it out. They're going to have to eventually. Hopefully it's not Kane.
Oh, God, no. I sure hope not.
How many times have we seen that one in the past few years? We need a title contender for a month. Let's push Kane again.
Well, if it's on SmackDown, Kane was facing Bray Wyatt in an ODQ match, and Randy Orton's the one that cost him the match against Bray Wyatt.
Right,
which,
right.
Which led to Orton saying, if you can't beat him, join him. I don't know what's going on with that, but I mean,
that's what's great about it, right?
Before we get to the Hell in a Cell predictions, and speaking of Kane, his kayfabe brother, The Undertaker.
Kayfabe?
Let's stick with kayfabe here.
They're not
the
really
Undertaker
brothers.
Last night joined the Cleveland Cavaliers' opening night championship celebration. The last time we saw the dead man, there were photos of him on crutches. Turns out he was getting hip surgery. He seems to be doing a little bit better, but the dead man was spotted in Cleveland, Ohio last night celebrating with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
This is amazing. This is amazing.
Who said kayfabe was dead?
The Cavaliers. The fact that he showed up in kayfabe it's just...
Well, that's
well, not entirely kayfabe, because there's Taker in dead man persona given the rock symbol. Given the metal horns.
Look at his face, though. He's still not cracking.
He doesn't care.
No,
he's like, I'm done in the rain. I just want to dress up as a dead man and take photos of
this
people.
This is, you know, I mean, in 2016, you got to appreciate this. Like,
yeah.
If Undertaker was like 5-10 years younger, he wouldn't have shown up in Cleveland. He would have signed up for Twitter and said "Go Cavs" or a smiley emoji.
Yeah,
this is old school, man. I I'm tired of the Undertaker in ring because I fear for his life when he's in the ring now. But this, he's not in the ring. There's no possibility of injury. This is beautiful. And it's just great because. If you pay attention to basketball, the Cavs, they do like a couple like nods in respect to wrestling in WWE. LeBron wore
An Undertaker shirt
and said, we're going to come back from this. He wore an Ultimate Warrior shirt. I think it was coming off of the plane when he first got back to Cleveland after they won the championship. Kevin Love did the Stone Cold Steve Austin beer drinking thing in the locker room to celebrate winning the championship. So, like, these guys get it. They're, you know, they're honest fans. So.
Also, he came out for that and they proceeded to beat the Knicks by as many points as his WrestleMania matches. Wins
the Cavs won. The Cavs won, and it's not just because they're a great basketball team. It's because the Undertaker was there.
Well, here we go. Like here's LeBron wearing the Undertaker shirt, and this was when they were down three games to one or whatever.
And no one has ever come back.
Steph
from
Curry
a
was the
deficit.
One behind the one yes. in 3-1.
So LeBron James wears an Undertaker shirt. He is a humongous wrestling fan. And a lot of the Cavs players are wrestling fans as well. So that's what led to The Undertaker going to Cleveland to celebrate with the Cavaliers. Like, Taker, he's still dressing in kayfabe, but to see The Undertaker just having a little fun.
And it was unplanned. That's the best part. WWE always shows their hand now. They're always telling you who's coming next week and where you can see people. This was just out of the blue. The first time you saw the picture on your Facebook newsfeed or whatever, you were like, what? What's going on? When I first saw it, I thought it was an impersonator. I was like, that's not really The Undertaker. And I was like, oh, it really is. This is the best thing ever. I just think it's great. It's just everything's great about it.
So there's one, before we get to our Hell in a Cell preview, there is one rumor that we want to talk about, and it comes in the form of AJ Styles tweeting out a photo. And this photo, I'm going to bring it up for those of you who benefit watching the video podcast, it is a photo of him and Shawn Michaels in a very professionally looking photo with the caption, "Interesting photo, is it not?" Which leads me to the question. First off, to set this up, Shawn Michaels, after his retirement match with The Undertaker at WrestleMania 26, he has not been in the ring in competition since then because he wants to honor the retirement. And honestly, he had nothing left to prove. He retired and he's enjoying his retired life.
Definitely has nothing left
but
to prove.
In interviews he's given to say if he were to ever come back, who are people he would want to wrestle? And his top two choices are Daniel Bryan, who obviously can't because of obvious reasons, and AJ Styles.
I think we're getting this match, and it's going to be fucking amazing.
This leads me to the question. Is this or is it not the last dream match that is actually possible? We all have dream matches. We've had growing up fantasy matches. Like the first dream match for me was Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior. We got that dream match. Yeah. Then for the Attitude Era, the Monday Night Wars, there were three long standing dream matches. Hulk Hogan versus The Rock, which we got at WrestleMania 18. We had Goldberg versus Stone Cold Steve Austin, which we never got.
That never materialized.
And we had Undertaker versus Sting, which
never materialized.
If WWE just did it at WrestleMania 31, would have gotten it.
Triple H had to go over.
Yeah, and then they had to put him in the ring and take that turnbuckle powerbomb.
We would have gotten it at WrestleMania 32, but...
Which Bret Hart gave a 4 out of 10.
we will never see Goldberg versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. We will never see Undertaker versus Sting. But we can see, in my opinion, the greatest in-ring performer of all time, Shawn Michaels.
I was going to say the greatest in-ring performer and Shawn Michaels.
versus, I mean, I you can also throw in the possible argument, too. AJ Styles is also in that discussion being possibly the greatest in-ring performer ever.
Number 1A and 1B until Kenny Omega signs.
But this is what AJ Styles tweeted, and it's still at the top of his Twitter. It's still at the top of his Twitter profile. Interesting photo, is it not? @AJStyles.org. Guys,
Do you think Shawn Michaels can go?
Oh, he absolutely can. There's no doubt in my mind that he could probably still go.
I don't want to see a rusty, chubby, out of breath Shawn Michaels. That's the only thing. Like, if we're going to get Shawn Michaels, I want him to be in top form. I don't want him to be a shadow of himself. That would just crush it on so many levels for me.
I'm just picturing Shawn Michaels taking the Styles Clash right now, because Styles would win that match.
And Styles taking Sweet Chin Music. Oh, I mean, Michaels would do the right thing and put him over. But I mean, he doesn't need to put him over. They don't need to put each other over. I wouldn't be...
Well, Styles will be champion by then. So, Michaels has to put him over at that point.
Yeah, one-time return, you're losing. Which leads you to believe that that Lesnar's going over here versus Goldberg.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at this photo, and even though, yes, it is not an official photo, it's not an official WWE graphic, it is a Photoshop, but I'm looking at this photo, guys, and
I want it to happen.
I'm not... This match isn't even official. I don't know a thing about this match possibly being official, but I'm excited for this, and I want this match more than anything, because this, my friend, is a dream match. This is a real, legit dream match. And us as wrestling fans, Shawn Michaels is on everyone's list as being one of the all-time greatest. You would have to be really, really stupid to not think Shawn Michaels is on your top 10 greatest performers of all time. You would also have to be really stupid not to include AJ Styles on that list. So imagine these two going at it in the ring. Oh my God. The excitement is overwhelming right now. And this match is not even officially happening.
If you had that match at the Royal Rumble, do you put it before the Rumble or after?
Oh man.
It's going to be in San Antonio.
It's the Royal Rumble, so it's always all the singles matches are always before the Rumble.
I feel like you could make an exception on this one.
Yeah, this one you probably could make an exception. AJ Styles headlining the Royal Rumble a year after debuting at the Royal Rumble as WWE champion.
If this match could happen, I'd almost feel bad for the rest of WrestleMania season. Yeah. It'd feel like they're playing catch up the whole time.
Oh, man. Yeah, there's really no other match you could dig up for WrestleMania that would be better than this.
I'm trying not to get my hopes up, though. Whenever something like this comes out, I try to be...
Something usually happens at the last second. Yeah,
a careful pessimist. I don't want to break my own heart on this one. Heartbreak kid. Don't want to break my own heart.
You want them to unbreak your heart.
That's right. Complete me with that dream match.
All right, guys. Let's close out this show with our preview of Hell in a Cell. It is this Sunday on the WWE Network. And the first match on the card officially is the kickoff match. Cedric Alexander, Lince Dorado, and Sin Cara versus Tony Nese, Drew Gulak, or I think that's how you pronounce the name, right? Gulak?
Gulak, yeah.
And Daivari. Guys, what do we think of this match?
It's going to be a good match. Hopefully, they'll definitely give it time. It's going to be tucked away in the pre-show. I think the faces win. So, Cedric Alexander, Lince Dorado, Sin Cara. It's going to be a spot fest, which is, in this case, will be good, especially near the end of the match.
Agree. Spot fest, faces over. It's a kickoff match. You want to start the match. You want to start the night off with something that gets the crowd happy.
Match number two. Again, this is in no official order. Bayley versus Dana Brooke.
If anything other than Bayley winning happens, I'm gonna throw something at the TV.
Oh man, you're like stealing my. We're on the same page. So Bayley or we riot. There's just no other option to me.
Here's the thing: if Bayley loses or anything doesn't happen, if anything other than Bayley winning happens, our TVs are gonna be jobbers, and we're gonna be Braun Strowman.
Stupid Braun Strowman.
Arm wrestling match. That was stupid, by the way.
So dumb. All right, so, we're definitely predicting Bayley here.
Josh, since you know who I'm about to mention, with Dana Brooke's bad Ohio accent, it sounds like our buddy who's been on the show before, KP Burke, doing a like a Fargo or North Dakota accent.
You think Dana Brooke's
voice sounds like him? Like you're being
shots fired.
You're being passive aggressive. That's all I think of when I hear Dana Brooke talk.
Boy, I'd love to get KP Burke in here to respond to that, but he would have to actually show up.
Oh, yeah.
For the record, I like KP Burke. I feel like somebody's got to say something nice about him.
Yeah, so do I.
Really funny guy. He just says he's going to show up all the time, but he never does.
I'm going to actually talk. I'm going to see him tomorrow, so I'll
tell him I said he's funny and handsome.
He won't come on. He won't come on.
Hey, he's got a 25% average of showing up, okay? I mean, give him, cut some.
All right, Enzo Amore and Big Cass versus Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson.
Enzo and Cass, but I just made it so awkward for Josh.
Nah, I love everybody, you know?
No. Fuck that. He made things awkward for Josh because I mentioned a bit of KP's. He was the one being a dick.
Now you're gonna push the blame.
He opens the door, I throw a grenade in. That's how we work.
I don't want to disrupt the harmony and peace in this room right now. But Anderson's been taking too many losses. The club's winning this one.
And there's as much harmony and peace in this room as every debate that's happened so far. But actually, we disagreed on that one. I picked Enzo and Cass. I think this is going to be the start of Enzo and Cass's push. They're still botching Gallows and Anderson. Just have no faith in WWE's ability to book them properly.
I'm picking Enzo and Cass as well. And I just want to say, whoever took this photo of Luke Gallows, he looks like if someone told you to.
Fastest with a goatee. Huh? Huh?
There you go. Kayfabe. If someone, Luke Gallows' face in this photo looks like if someone asked you to do an impression of a resting bitch face. That's what Luke Gallows' face looks like here. All right. The next one on the card. This is going to be a tough pick for Punchy, I think. Raw Tag Team Championships. The New Day versus Cesaro. Bunchy's boy here, and Sheamus.
I want to see Cesaro winning some form of a title, but after Monday, like them winning clean over the New Day, the New Day are retaining. Hopefully this leads to a trade for Cesaro to SmackDown so that he can actually have a chance, because he'll be tucked away in SmackDown, so Vince won't have any issues with him getting a main event push.
I mean, the New Day has been absolutely killing it, and I think we were going to see them lose the titles at SummerSlam. And
no, they're
I thought that too.
I thought that too.
I thought that was a good time for them to lose.
They're going to break the record. There's no doubt in my mind they're going to break the record. So until that happens, New Day is retaining. There's no questions asked. I think Sheamus and Cesaro fall apart as a tag team midway through the match, and that leads them to another singles match,
which is really exciting.
Yeah, which leads to Foley trading one of them to SmackDown.
That makes sense. Yeah, New Day, it's the demolition record or bust. And yeah,
Cesaro and Sheamus, loser leaves Raw.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yep,
that's a great idea.
And then Daniel Bryan, like, hey, your contract's up. I'm going to sign you. Yes.
All right, Cruiserweight Championship. TJ Perkins versus the Brian Kendrick.
They need to put the "the" in there. Get it together, WWE.com.
Yeah, Perkins is winning.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt in my mind that Perkins walks out of here the winner.
Do we even need to analyze this? Perkins is winning.
Although, you know, the only thing that's weird, the only thing that makes me think that Kendrick has a chance is that Rich Swann beat him clean on Raw. What's up with that? Unless they're going to have Swann. Swann
because might have a legitimate. Because, can you handle this?
I love Rich Swann. Don't get me wrong. I want to party with that guy. If Brian Kendrick wins, then Rich Swann immediately can come in and say, I deserve a title shot. I also do think that TJ Perkins is very boring on camera. His in-ring style is great, but his personality when he talks on a mic, it's a snooze fest. So part of me is a little worried that they might take the title off of him, but I just think it's too soon to take the title off of the first Cruiserweight champion. So
yeah,
I'm going to say TJ Perkins, soon. But... I don't know.
I'm picking with TJ Perkins, a.k.a. the create a virtual fighter character.
TJ Perkins, a.k.a. the guy who's got the title because Kota Ibushi would not sign a contract.
Very, very true with that. All right. The first of three main event in the triple main event. Three Hell in a Cell matches, which I give Daniel Bryan credit for taking a shot at Raw, saying, oh, what, more's better. Why don't we have six Hell in a Cell matches? Then the winner could be the Galaxy champion. Very funny from Brian, by the way. But the first of three Hell in a Cell matches, Roman Reigns versus Rusev for the U.S. title.
Roman Reigns, and I'm only saying that because I want him as far away from the main event scene as possible, so him keeping the U.S. title keeps him in that position. I don't want him anywhere near Kevin Owens' Universal title.
Roman Reigns is going to win. I feel like he's the heel in this story.
It's
unbelievable.
The way they're presenting it, it's almost as if Roman's working heel, but they're like, no, he's not. He's the good guy because Rusev.
He just keeps doing mean things to here Rusev and Lana. Yeah,
here comes Roman Reigns to do something incredibly mean to Rusev and his wife, Lana, who hasn't really done anything to him in the first place.
Yeah.
Because he's the babyface.
But yeah, Rusev's going to win. Roman's going to win, and it's my bathroom break, so.
Yeah, it's everyone's bathroom break. It'll be the second to last match.
All right, the second of three Hell in a Cell matches, WWE Universal Champion Kevin Owens versus Seth Rollins for the belt. And what I think is going to be the main event. I want the women to main event, but I think this is going to be your closer. Owens versus Rollins, Hell in a Cell, thoughts?
I'm picking KO. I think they've got bigger plans for Rollins that don't require needing the Universal title. They've got other stuff they can do with KO until it's time for him to eventually lose that title.
Yeah.
KO's winning this. They might do another match, like might even interject Jericho, but yeah.
I think it's too soon to take the title off of Kevin Owens, especially... in the match that he got in with Triple H, it was such a big deal. It's just way too soon. So, yeah, Kevin Owens is going to retain. Maybe some shenanigans. Who knows?
I got a very funny feeling that there might be some interference with this. I'm sensing one of these matches going to have interference.
I got a weird overbooking prediction that the interference will be turning heel Roman Reigns.
That might be. But I think who comes out the title, who gets the pinfall, I think Kevin Owens gets the pinfall.
Yeah, Kevin Owens is winning.
And Roman wouldn't be turning heel. He would just maintain his heel-ness.
Well, good point.
And what should be the main event, Sasha Banks versus Charlotte.
Charlotte Flair.
Oh, yeah, Charlotte Flair.
Yeah, they officially changed the name, yeah.
First ever women's title match inside Hell in a Cell. First time women are competing inside Hell in a Cell. This is a historic match. It should be the main event. Should be. It's the top match on the WWE website. It's the face of the poster.
It's a first time ever match.
It can't be in the main event is just staggering to me. I don't know. If this isn't the main event, I absolutely question WWE. But the match itself, Women's Championship, I think they screwed up the booking with this already. They're in Boston. They're in Sasha Banks' hometown. Sasha should be winning the title at this pay-per-view in front of her home crowd. But... I mean, she's walking as champion. I'm kind of sort of afraid that she's going to drop the belt in front of her home crowd. I'm terrified that they're going to give Charlotte the belt again.
They're not. The only reason she lost the belt at SummerSlam was because of injury. I think she's going to keep it for a while.
I'm picking Charlotte here just because I have a gut feeling that they're going to really... I don't know, but my gut is telling me for somehow that Charlotte wins this. Mike, you pick Sasha Banks. Josh, what say you?
Before I make my pick real quick, I just want to say that these two are probably going to put on a hell of a show.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to cry at some point
It'll
in the match.
Be the match of the
because
night.
It's going to be the most beautiful thing ever. my heart says Sasha Banks. My brain is 50-50 on it, so I'm going Sasha Banks.
I mean, regardless of who wins, this is a historic night for women's wrestling. The women in WWE have been killing it since WrestleMania 32 in Texas. They had arguably match of the night, and I say arguably, I'm 90% confident with that fact.
At WrestleMania?
WrestleMania,
absolutely.
The women's match was by far the most entertaining match of the night. The women have had fantastic storylines since WrestleMania, and going into this, the women's title match... I'm the most excited for this match, not because of the historic significance of this, but these two are having arguably feud of the year in WWE, and I hope that they continue this somehow after this, but my gut is telling me Charlotte walks out the champion. You guys are picking Sasha. I completely agree with you guys, though, that they are going to tear the house down. This match is going to be outstanding. And on that note, that is our show. I want to thank you all for listening. You can follow the show at BSR Wrestling on Twitter. I am at Hams Gruber on Twitter. You are at Hipster Punchy on Twitter.
No, at Michael R. Falcone on Twitter. I changed it.
Oh.
Yes.
New gimmick.
Yes, new gimmick. Repackaging. Also, I just got bored with the name. It happens.
Because you have completely transformed into the hipster. It's no longer a gimmick now. And Josh, where can they find
because
you?
Because I like better things than you. But also,
Twitter, at Josh Ain't Funny. Follow me.
All right, guys. Thank you all very much for watching. We will see you next week. Enjoy Hell in a Cell. And we will talk to you next Wednesday night, 10 o'clock, right here on BrainStewRadio.com. See you then.